irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. And I'm hearing, is that me?
I'm turning that off because that's too many. It's delayed.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah, for the we're setting up the Facebook Live, and I just want to let you know if you're listening, if you go to the LA Talk Radio Facebook page, you can click on the live stream so you can see what we're doing, because Rob's brought some really beautiful guitars here, and you're going to take a look at them. Also, I shared it on the All About Guitar page and also on my personal page, and I think, Rob, you already got yours on yours and on the Music Mystique. So anyway, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff.
Well overdue. But I'm glad it's. This week I was working on preparing for the show, and we're going to talk about Rob's new album, Trouble Again, and it's a great album. There's some really cool things that he's doing, and the different guitars and tones that he gets are just incredible. Now, while we're talking, I'm going to flash the cover of the album. It's not out yet, right?
It's not out yet, no.
When is it going to be released?
I should be receiving the CDs in the next 2 weeks.
Okay. So
and the vinyl to follow probably in 6 weeks.
Oh, okay. So
vinyl.
We're getting vinyl. A sneak
peek. Get your turntables
peek.
Out.
Yeah, indeed.
And this album, really, there's a lot of different styles and techniques that he's using, and gobs of guitars on it. So yes. It's really, really cool. But before we start playing some of the clips, and I have a bunch, let's talk a little bit about the concept behind the album, what you were going for, and I just found out, too, there's a second album that's all acoustic. So tell us about that.
Sure. I don't know that I began writing the songs for this album with anything in mind other than I'm just going to write a lot of songs and see what sticks and what doesn't stick. And I like to think that this particular record of the records I've released has the most cohesion. It's the most song by song. I don't think it's stylistically schizophrenic, but I think it all kind of touches on my various influences, but also retains kind of a cohesion as a whole. And, it was a selection process. I did have more than 10, the album's a 10-song album, but I had probably twice as many songs that I weeded through. Something also that was different about making this record, whereas in the past, the other albums I've recorded, you know, I'd write a song, then I'd record a song, and then I'd write a song, then I'd record the song. These all were written, I think, from start to finish before I ever laid a note, you know, on tape. So when it came to making the record, I had all the songs, and it perhaps that speaks to the cohesion of the arrangements and the I don't know, the relation between the songs together.
It definitely has it's definitely cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you said, though it's interesting because he plays with a lot of different styles. Mm-hmm. Even though the album is, in general, the overall sound of the album is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of little things that he throws in and stuff that he's doing that's kind of interesting. And I noticed we were talking a little bit before, there's some really interesting synth stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah. It gave me a lot of more of a nostalgic thing because you're doing some really cool stuff. We're going to play a clip later where he has this R&B feel, and it just reminds me of the old days.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really cool, and again, the tone of the guitars. There's definitely a whole different sound compared to the other albums that you had that we looked at the first time you were over here.
Thanks. I think that each of the songs represents, I guess, a certain, in terms of style, just it's an honest representation of my influences. There's no, there's really and truly and honestly from the heart, there's no pretension in this record. And at this point, I'm too old to even think or worry about pretension. It's like I'm not trying to be something or trying to do something. I do fit within a certain niche of music. But I'm not trying to make a song for somebody over here that might like it, or maybe this guy likes it, or maybe radio's going to want to like this. It just didn't happen that way.
You just made it for yourself,
right, Laurie?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more layer. The thing I notice is the arrangements and the layers. There's a lot of stuff and all those had to be a lot of tracks because you're
yes.
and it's but you're getting you, it's that's a trick to mix.
Yeah, I can talk about that too. I ran into a few DAE errors for those people who do Pro Tools. I don't even know what that means. I just when that thing comes up, I just click it and
it's uh-oh.
It's gone. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I mix and record exclusively with the cans. So because I think I grew up listening to music on headphones, and I'm a very microscopic listener, whether that comes from being a jazz musician as well as being whatever. I like to hear all the details, and I will obsess on the littlest thing that you may not even notice if you listen to the record. I may have obsessed for hours over that.
Are you? Let me ask you something in terms of your mixing,
uh-huh.
since you're talking about that. When you mix in headphones,
mm-hmm.
the difference I've seen with mixing from headphones and speakers is I tend not to go as wide with panning and stuff with the headphones instead of the speakers. Because if you pan hard left and right, it's like right here,
right.
Each ear.
Well, yeah. Well, the funny thing is I'm slightly slightly more deaf in this ear than I am in this ear, my right ear, whatever. And sometimes I just compensate for that lack of hearing in the one ear, and I just turn up that side a little more. So something might be off balance. That said, I will always reference, once I'm done mixing in the headphones, I will reference on the speakers as well, just to make sure things are sitting where they're supposed to. Because for many years, I've struggled with finding and fighting with low-end EQ and learning about how to deal with that and how do you, learning about subtractive EQ versus, additive EQ, if that's what you call it. I don't know.
Well, that must have been interesting because you're recording to vinyl. A lot of people that, since they're going digital, they don't have to worry about the low end, but you do have to worry. It's a whole other game, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't, making the record, I wasn't thinking about vinyl,
Right.
But it's going to be on vinyl, so yeah, I guess.
So who ended up mastering the vinyl?
The same guy that mastered he did everything. His name is Stefan Marsh. He's a great, great guy. He's over up in the Hollywood Hills, a place called Marsh Mastering. And I've always taken my stuff to him, and he's done, an impeccable job. And he cares, he cares about it. He takes the time to make things right.
Yeah.
And, it's something you can't, you gotta put that extra expense out there and do the mastering right. You can't just do it
at home
yourself.
It can make or break the record.
It sure can, yeah.
It's vital.
It really is.
It's almost as important as mixing it.
It's fascinating, and I don't quite completely understand the process, but I love to hear, how'd you take the vocals out? How'd you do that? It's all EQ, and it's all.
It's definitely an important step.
I've seen records, or I've talked to mastering engineers where they recorded all around the world at different studios, and it all sounds different. And they'll make it all sound consistent.
Yeah, sure.
It's there's an art to that, and it's a really good mastering engineer can make or break a record.
Absolutely.
It can be great songs, but it's mastered bad.
Yeah. Well, he was talking about when I last saw him a couple weeks ago about, you know, the trend was to basically make that wavelength as wide as possible, to make it as loud as possible. Everybody wants their stuff to be loud. And, you know, he's like, that's a trend. It's a fad. It's going to go away. Why are you doing that? You're ruining the whole dynamic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's something pretty obvious. I think if you hear a wavelength that's completely slammed from top to bottom versus one with space and whatever, you know, that's, you want that in music. That's
space. Yeah,
it's,
well,
space.
That's a thing. Yeah.
You don't get that in today's music, you crazy kids.
Well, a lot of the stuff that's even in streaming, you know, through the internet, like your Pandoras and mm-hmm. Spotify's, mm-hmm. they're compressed. And so people are used to that because they're listening through a little speaker, mm-hmm. or they might be listening on a small speaker system in the office or something.
Sure.
So you need, the compression helps, you know, so it's at a comfortable level.
Sure.
Because, you know, if you have a lot of dynamics, all of a sudden it'll get quiet, you turn it up and it blasts.
Exactly.
Especially at work, that's not fun. But I just want to mention one thing, though, and I'm going to play a cut in a second.
Sure.
One thing I noticed, it wasn't very bass heavy, but mm-hmm. I have to say the bass lines, much more bass lines mm-hmm. than I noticed from some of the other songs the past, and very melodic.
Thank you.
That means you got better at playing bass.
Perhaps that was it.
So let me...
You played everything on it, right?
I did.
I did. I had a feeling because it all fit perfect.
Thanks.
And then all the stuff. But, I mean, he's actually doing some really cool things for bass. I mean, for playing bass, it's an interesting. So I'm going to play the opening cut.
Sure.
And this is called Passenger.
Passenger
Seat. I'm going to play a clip for this. And now, let me explain, too, that these songs are songs, and there's a lot of vocals in them.
It's a lot of
vocals. So I'm pulling just parts to kind of show the guitar part. So
sure.
I'm severely editing. So remember, there's much more to the album than this.
There you go.
But here's Passenger.
Seat.
We got forever tonight. Had no need to hurry home. Yeah, we got forever tonight. Had no need to hurry home.
No need to hurry home.
We got forever tonight.
We got forever.
Had no
tonight.
Need to hurry home. Ain't gonna hurry home.
There's a good example of some of the cool little bass riffs that he was doing in there. But those guitars, are great. You got to tell me what you were using on that.
Wow, I got to think now. Well, I can tell you generally what I used throughout the whole album, whether it was specifically that one. I think what it was. Okay, let me explain my different rigs I have. So I have two separate live cabinets that are permanently mic'd. One is an orange 212 speaker, closed back speaker thing. I built like these boxes that contain the speakers themselves with the mics so that I can blast them at all hours, you know, without anybody screaming too much. And I believe that Passenger Seat, those were also recorded through an orange AD30 into that cabinet, sorry. But for other songs and I'm not quite sure which specifically. I have a 68 Vibrochamp that I run into a 12-inch, I think it's a Greenback speaker. It's an open back speaker that's also boxed and enclosed and permanently mic'd. And I kind of traded between the 68 Vibrochamp and a 66 Princeton. And then for most of the lead guitar parts, I have a Vox. A Vox AC-15 I used also. I have a Vox Tone Lab, which is a little in-the-box kind of, you know, sort of like a pod or whatever it is. And I used that a lot for lead guitar because I can tweak certain frequencies to really bring the guitar out and complement the other guitars without being buried or lost.
Did you use the Vox, the AC-15, for like the sparkle type sounds? Because you get a lot of bright, clean, or semi-clean.
Probably not. I think I used the AC-15 for dirt.
For dirt?
I want to say that the Princeton I used more for clean and sparkly.
Oh, okay.
Either that or I went directly into the board.
Oh, okay. Because when we get, we'll go into a little bit more of some of the other songs.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to play another clip, which I think is both electric and acoustic guitars, and then we can talk a little bit about the challenges in mixing.
Yeah.
Because this is, it's interesting to get I think this is a 12 string. I might be wrong. The clip is Dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And but to get those guitars to hear them, because you're playing a dirty sound too in there. Oh, one real quick question on passenger seat.
Yeah.
That type of Stones type of rhythm. Yeah. What was that? Is that a Tele?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that was my blue Tele. It's just an American Standard from the late '90s that I slapped a Bigsby on, and just been kind of like my main gigging instrument, and it's just there, so I grabbed it, and that was that.
It looks pretty on stage.
Yeah, that's a nice guitar.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful guitar. Nice. But I mean, that. Any other guitars? Any other electrics that you were using on that, or?
Probably the three that I usually use, you know, that Tele. I have a Butterscotch Tele, a 52 reissue that I use a bit. And then I have two Stratocasters. One's a 76 Strat, and then one's a 79. And I record most basic guitars with those, with the Fender guitars, just because, you know, you don't have the mush of a humbucker. It just breathes more. I don't know what it is. The Fenders for rhythm guitars, especially when they're stacked like that.
Yeah.
You know.
And there's a lot of layers in there. You're using a lot of tracks on that.
Yeah.
All right, let's play Dreaming. And this is an edit, so I kind of pulled in this song's a longer song, but I think you'll get an idea of some of the layering. It's really nice what he's doing here. Nice. So here's Dreaming.
She thought completeness of life, man. Standing in the shower stall, the water's cold. The chapter read, the verse complete. Quietly revealing the story. Wasn't where she wanted to be.
So you get that's interesting because in that second verse or whatever, you're playing open chords or you're strumming. You're not muting the electric guitar, but you can still hear I was asking him when we were playing the clip, was that a 12 string or not? But it wasn't.
No, not in the intro. That was just acoustic and electric together.
Okay. So, but, I mean, it's interesting because you can hear the two parts.
Well, that makes 12 strings.
That does make 12 strings. You're right. Yeah, you're right. The only part that is actual is 12 string is that...
Oh, there is one.
That's, okay. That's electric 12, and that's in the second verse. That's just a line, though, and then there's a couple more lines of that, yeah.
Which 12 string did you use?
That's a Rick 360 12.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then the... what you were saying something about the lead, the little riff that you do when you're singing. There's a guitar riff. Which guitar was that?
That's the 12. That's the electric 12. Oh. That's the electric 12 that does that.
Oh, okay.
But
there was a distorted, like a...
Oh. I don't even remember what the heck I played. How's that song going? Gave herself to compromise. I want to say it was the telly again.
Was the telly? You
know? More than likely the telly. But another interesting layer that I added to this song that I didn't add as much to any of the other tunes, I found this old effect. It's called the Space Station.
Yes.
You know what it is. It's that yellow pedal. It's like the Whammy. Digitech Space Station. They don't make them anymore. And they go for pretty good money if you look around. It has this wonderful kind of a synthy string swell sound. And when I tracked it, it was slightly, I mean, it was off tuning-wise by, I don't know what the fraction was. So I had to go back in and manually pitch that part so that it kind of didn't clash with everything else. But it has a dreamy kind of like...
Is that what's doing the, like, pad behind
it? Yeah.
That's a nice sound.
Yeah,
it's
a
beautiful
guitar,
sound, right?
That's a guitar, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good.
It achieved what you were looking for.
Yeah,
it
I mean,
definitely.
Whenever I play through that thing, I just my eyes tear up. I just it's so pretty and beautiful and like nostalgic and 80s kind of. I don't know what I can't explain it.
Yeah, it definitely.
It's got a beautiful thing.
You can see your influences. Mm-hmm. It's definitely in it. But what's now you, on Facebook Live? This is in mono, but I urge you to go and download the show and listen to it in headphones. Because you can hear what he's doing. There's a lot of space and there's a lot of layers, both front to back and then also from side to side. And he's doing some cool stuff. And in that song, especially when it goes into that second verse, when you hear what he's talking about, the space station thing, it's a nice feel.
It blooms. It's like a bloom.
Yeah. It's very, 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 very
cool. And if you want the record, hey, just go robbonfilio.com. Click.
Yes. And
then you can hear all of it.
Then you can hear all of it.
Yeah, there's plenty more, and there's actually some more stuff. He does little fills, and there's little things you'll hear that makes it interesting because you know in the next verse he throws. Oh, that's cool.
I have OCD, and I'm very detail oriented.
And you work late at night, right? I'm sure.
Yes, I do. That's many late hours.
Well, I'm going to play another clip that I really. Well, actually, no. Before I do that, let's talk a little bit about mixing that.
Sure.
And the difficulties, because that wasn't an easy mix. There's a lot of, and we're going to play some other stuff later that's even bigger.
I think when you think of mixing in general, you kind of picture, you know, like a kitchen table with all the different ingredients everywhere, and you got to make something. You got to make a cake or whatever. When I record, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, when I'm recording a song, I'm basically mixing as I'm going along. Mm-hmm. So the drums are laid down. I kind of set a level for that. When I'm laying the guitar on top of the drums or whatever the second element of the creation is, I'll balance that out. And then it's just all kind of progressive that way. So that by the time I get to the end of the recording and I feel like I'm done, it's basically mixed already. You know, it's just a matter of tweaking specific little levels here and there. So, you know, mixing as, you know, if you are a mixer, you know, a professional mixer, it's very interesting. It's an interesting gig because you have to start from scratch. You know what I mean? You got to start with the ingredients laid out, but not together. Versus if you're doing your own thing, you kind of know where it's going to be and where it's going to go and how you want it to be. So I don't know, you know, that's how I mix.
Well, for example, some people, do you EQ as you lay the tracks down, or do you just record them as best you can and EQ later? That's a big thing.
No, well, yeah, I'm glad you said that, because if it doesn't sound good going down, I will make it sound good. It has to sound the way I want it to sound, you know. Okay. I can't just lay down something and I'll fix it later. I can't do that. I don't know how to do that.
Okay.
You know,
so you're already EQing that makes space for... Because with those layers, you got to take out certain things.
Sure. Sometimes the most interesting parts have to be sacrificed for the greater good. You know, I've done that a lot, too. Like, oh, I want to keep that part, but it just doesn't work.
Bye. But I mean, too, because when you get into... And there's a lot of layers of vocals.
Yeah.
I mean... You've always impressed me with your vocal arrangements. You do all these really cool harmonies and stuff.
Yeah, big sound. I love it.
Very big, and that takes up a lot of room.
It does. And aside there, if you want to go to my pledge page or robbonfilio.com, you can click on my pledge music thing. One of the downloads I'm offering is an a cappella mix of the record, just all the vocals by themselves.
Oh, very cool.
Because I think a lot of the nuance gets kind of lost.
That.
You got to check it out. It's really cool. I think it's. I mean, I'm not. Tooting my own horn, but
there's an art.
No,
well,
no,
an art
it's
there's an art to
it. Well, here's also a thing. I found what works with my vocals, and it's a very unorthodox setup when I record vocals. I record through an AT4050 mic, which is similar to this. This is a AT4035.
Yeah.
So I have an AT4050 that I run, and the compression that I use is a Boss CS3 comp pedal. It's a stomp box pedal. I just go right into that. The mic goes into that, comes out, goes into the board, and I think there's a little bit of the Fairchild 660 I use a lot. Mm-hmm. And when
that's a plug-in.
It's a plug-in, yeah. I don't have a real one. I wish I did someday. But when I stack my vocals that way, they don't get too thick. They don't get too, like, the frequency. It doesn't go crazy. I can stack, 20 vocals, and it'll still sound okay. It won't be, like, gook, you know. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it has to do with the unorthodox way I'm routing it, you know. And so
you found your way.
I found my way, and you know what? It's been that way for so long. Yeah. I love it, and
it works. I mean, it doesn't sound like a choir. It just sounds like your background
using that,
vocals.
Right, using that Boss... is part of that because that
it is.
Colors the sound.
I'm sure, you know.
It's not a flat, and I'm not saying that derogatorily. It's
no.
Not flat. It has its own unique character.
It does, and it, for whatever it works. And I've tried other things with my voice. I've tried higher-end pieces of gear, and it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in my ears, it doesn't work. I'm sure somebody else could figure it out, but I guess I got a weird frequency in my voice that...
No, but I mean the kind of vocals that you're doing where it's so... The harmonies, and there's so many parts.
Right.
It does work, and it makes it... When you double or triple or how many layers of the voices you're putting on there, it gets that blend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a definite sound to that.
Yeah, there is.
So I have one question that has nothing to do with guitars,
sure.
but with mixing.
Yeah.
Is how do you spread the voices out, or do you?
I do generally. Generally, and this is just, it's a song-by-song basis, but, I'll put the main vocal down, the lead vocal. I might double it, or I might not. In the chorus, I might have the lead vocal in the middle, and I'd have a ghost vocal on the left and the right, far left and right, singing the same thing. So it just kind of like opens it up. With background vocals, I always pan hard left, right, and double. So for each stack in the harmony, it's hard left, hard right, and then...
But those ghost vocals, do you put them in the cave, in the back, in the reverb?
Sometimes, sometimes. And sometimes I don't do it at all, but it depends on whatever the chorus. It just makes when the chorus comes around, it makes it bigger. It just makes it bigger, and you can't quite, maybe it's not immediately perceptible as to why it's bigger, but it is because there's three vocals actually singing lead.
Yeah. Well, one thing I learned in some of the stuff that I've done where I've layered guitars,
mm-hmm.
I'd record two acoustic guitars and pan them hard left and right.
Yeah.
And what I found is you don't have to turn them up as much, but it brings the part out.
Sure.
So it's a subtle thing, but you could, with the two guitars on each side, rather if you had one guitar, you got to crank it up and then figure out where you want to place it.
Yeah.
With the two, it's less. You don't have to put in it.
You don't.
It's not as demanding on the range.
True. But depending on your arrangement, if you have two acoustic guitars, hard left and right, and then you just mute one out and put one in the center, it's a whole different thing.
Right,
It's a whole different perception of amplitude or whatever. Amplitude, that's a plug-in.
Yes, that is a plug-in.
Clever.
But let's take this is one of my favorites. This is called Gone, And we'll talk. I'm just going to play it, and then we'll talk a little bit more because you'll understand once once I play it. This is this brings back a lot of memories to me. So this is Gone. Take a listen. So cool. Nice. And for a minute, I thought Larry Carlton was playing in there. That sound.
You're right, though, Jeff. You guessed it. It was Jeff said, "Is that a 335? Close. You're 10 off, sir. It's a 345.
But what amp? How did you set that up? I got that sound.
That I'm pretty sure I went through the Vox Tone Lab, which is it's the pod, the Vox version of the pod. You know, like I said, for a lot of lead stuff, I will go into those kind of pod things because there's a certain frequency you can dial in to rise above the rest of the stuff. You know,
but it's interesting because you got that sustain that he used to use an MXR Dynacomp.
What did I? You know what?
He used to crank a deluxe to get that sound.
Right. Yeah.
That was that sound. I'm like, that's really cool.
I have to go back. You know, it's all the notes are in the session, but once I do it, I forget what I did.
Now the other rhythm guitars, are those Strats or Teles?
More than likely Telecasters, unless it was the 76 Strat, which is possible. And I ran it through a small stone, so you got that chorusy thing. And I think they were just direct through the small stone into a DI into the board.
Oh, okay. Because it's real glassy.
Sound. Yeah, yeah.
But that was a great groove in there.
Thanks. I almost didn't put that song on the record too, because it was
really.
I wasn't sure, and then I was happy. I was happy how it came out.
No, at the very end too, you hear he does that little synth break.
That I think
that's
that was
so cool.
I don't even know what that was. Was that the K oscillator? one of those synth pad things. Yeah.
Oh, it was a synth pad. There's a lot of like a vintage synth parts in there. Is that using?
That was born out of I bought an old Sequential Circuits Pro 1. They're called.
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah, these are from like the late 70s, early 80s, and there's a few around, but a lot of them have just fallen into disrepair, and you know they're hard to find the parts to I had this in the shop for months, and it cost like, I don't know, $500 to find the little parts to whatever I had to do to fix it. Once it came home, I was like, yes, because this thing has, I don't know, four different oscillators. It's a monophonic keyboard, and it's it's related to the Prophet 5, which is the legendary.
Oh yeah,
the Prophet. You know, it's like the baby brother to that. And I just did a lot of the ARP things in it, and just some of those low, all that stuff.
So you're into dialing.
Oh, I love it,
because there, Oberheim, I think now make not Oberheim, Behringer makes a copy of the Mini Moog. It's
nice.
A little module, and it's only $400.
Wow.
And
see, I want to get a real one.
Yeah, don't we all?
$4,000 later.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, the reviews have been good. In fact, they've been selling out. They're hard to get because they sell out so fast. But just a reminder, because that fat sound, that filter on there is to die for.
It's so great. And I bought a Roland had a keyboard called the J106. Is that what it's called?
Juno 106.
Juno 106. Yeah, and they released the little modules. Like the replications of it, and I got the little module, the Juno. It's called the JU06, and it's got that sound. I don't know. That's 1984 Blade Runner synth
yeah,
sound.
Yeah, that
I
was used Vangelis it. Used that
right.
All the time.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
That and was his synth. That
I used, was the synth. Yeah, I used that a lot on a song on here called Love Over Hurt, and that's all over that song. But I just love that stuff. I love those old synth sounds. You know, I was going to buy an original one, but you know why? You know, they're
this is working for you.
This is working. It's mm-hmm. cheap. It was a module. It does a little bit more than the original one did, right. And it's not broken.
Now, how did you sequence that? Is that controlled via MIDI? Did you program it in your?
No, it's a keyboard thing. You can buy a keyboard. You buy the module, but you can also buy the keyboard part. You just plug the module into the keyboard, and I just plugged it into the keyboard and ran, you know, quarter inch out. And
you just play. So you played, those riffs.
Yeah. Wow. Oh no, not that. No,
you're good.
No, God, no, not that good. The cascading thing. It came from, I think it's called a K-oscillator. Korg makes. They make a chaos pad and then a K-oscillator. The chaos pad is kind of like an effects thing. You can run sound through it, and then it's literally a touch pad that's about 6 by 6 inches, mm-hmm. and you just slide your finger around. You can make it do little things. Like,
oh, so
it
changes all of what
it
you have.
Changes the parameter. Yeah, the parameters.
Cool.
Yeah, you can run the sound through it. You can change a parameter of a delay or a reverb or whatever. That's the chaos pad, but then there's what's called the K-oscillator, and it's the same thing, but the pad, it's like patches of like synth sounds.
He gets some of the older synths. I don't know if the Juno had it, the arpeggiator.
Right.
You can actually program it to do.
I love that. Yeah. I mean,
it would
I
do
did.
That, but it was similar to that. And then there was some other things that you were doing in some of the other songs, mm-hmm. where it was called sample and hold, where they used a noise generator to change the filter so it gets.
Sure.
Sound.
Right.
So he's doing all these cool synth things.
And I got to tell you, a lot of these things were afterthoughts. You know, it's like, I want to put something here, and I want to use this. I just bought this stupid thing. I want to use it. Okay, that sounds cool. Hey, I'll do that.
Right, but it kind of gets you by surprise. You're like listening to all this stuff, and he's got all these vocals and guitars, and it. And I'm like, what was that?
And I think it's true to the vibe of the song, too, so it's just kind of cool.
Yeah, no. I mean, this song, Gone, it was
yeah.
part of that sound.
Right.
But you do it in other stuff. I'm hearing mm-hmm. stuff where you're doing filter sweeps and
stuff. I was going to call the album ARP.
ARP.
There's a lot of ARPs going
on. People don't remember the ARPs. I still have my Odyssey.
ARP.
But, no, it's a really cool sound what you're
Thanks.
Doing there. Now, let's talk about some heavy guitar stuff.
Yeah.
I think this one, and I want to go into, because there's a lot of tone in this one.
Huh.
I'm going to play, this is an edit, There Goes My Heart. So let's play this clip and let's talk a little bit about what you did in here.
Sure.
Because this is very cool.
There goes my heart. Time was meant to last. We'd be forever. Feels like I'm tethered to the past. But I should know better. Last summer, we called it love without a name. Well, here we are, full circle, but it's not the same. There goes my heart. Sunshine, can't wait till winter gray is done. This heart was always meant to run.
Now, there's a lot of guitars in there.
Probably less than you would think, though.
Well, no, I heard two electrics
mm-hmm.
left and right, and they're playing different things.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the background, it just comes in the tinkle of acoustic,
mm-hmm.
and it's in there.
Acoustic is ghosting throughout the whole song, yeah.
And then later on, you have the lead, which I want to ask you, because
sure.
that's a cool sound. It's like, It sounds like it's doubled. Did you double that, or did you use like a harmonizer type?
No, I definitely doubled.
You doubled that.
Yeah, and I want to say that was through the Pod XT. Mm-hmm. I have all the pods. I got like the original, the kidney bean pod, whatever. Then the Pod XT came out, and then the Pod X3 came out, and I just bought them all. And, you know, I'll go to different ones for certain things.
Now, is that flanged or chorused slightly? Because it has a timbre to it.
That part?
That lead.
I don't think so.
It's just the doubling. Because I know that
you can get that sound. Yeah. But I think it's just pure double.
Okay.
Pure double, yeah. I always think when I do it, I'll put down like lines like that that are just single note lines. And I always think of like The Man Who Sold the World, like all those early Bowie, Mick Ronson stuff, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. where he's just playing single lines. And it's so huge, though. You're like, that's huge, but it's just a single line, you know, whatever.
Well, when you go into that towards the end of the clip, that the low strings, dude.
Right, yeah,
that
yeah.
Riff. Yeah, that's pretty. But also, too, the other guitars, now, are those the Tellys that you're using for the rhythm?
Yeah.
And then what was the acoustic?
My Gibson Jumbo. I use that pretty exclusively.
It cuts right above. It just gives that little timbre.
I use I use the AKG C40 451s.
Mm-hmm.
I use a stereo pair of those, and I always do the X pattern, and I kind of center it somehow. I don't know. I just find the right spot, and I run that through the API 512Cs, the lunchbox thing, you know, as preamps, and then that goes into the board from there. And I don't do a whole lot more. I probably EQ a little bit plug-in-wise, but yeah, the jumbo just sounds good. The jumbo,
yeah. That thing sounds great.
If I find the right
spot.
He
brought that last time. That was a beautiful guitar.
Thanks.
But the... Okay, so you're using the pod for the lead. The electric guitars, are you using amps?
Yeah, I'm using
the rhythm guitars for the rhythm.
And I want to say that was the 68 Champ.
68 Champ?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying there wasn't as many guitars. I don't know. I was hearing 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe.
Maybe you're right, yeah. It was more guitar heavy and less synth heavy.
Well, there's different parts, and that's the thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, too. Because, like, in that first part, you have those two guitars going,
mm-hmm.
and then in the next section, there's two guitars, but they sound different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're switching pickups or you're doing something, or is it a different part? Would you punch in, or did you tend to play the whole thing?
The basic rhythm track I probably played straight through, and the other parts were kind of accentuations.
Okay.
So that was probably just an extra piece.
Because you're going, I mean, I'm hearing a different sound as it evolves. And when you go into the next section, it is a little bit different.
Right.
So I don't know if it could be you're playing.
And, you know, the Rhodes also opens up there, too. So
that's true. That's true. And it fills it out.
Yeah. I don't know. I wish I had a more clear, concise answer.
No. I mean, I'm picking your brains.
No,
it's
thank
interesting
you.
To see the process.
I never get to talk about it. Yeah, no,
yeah.
Thanks.
I mean, it's kind
bring
of...
Bring your notes next time.
I
next
will.
Next album.
What notes?
He has some notes.
These notes are upcoming gigs.
Your tech notes of how you were doing stuff along the way.
Oh, my God. I write it down and forget it. That's what I do.
No, I mean, it's really... there's a lot of interesting... let me give another example of... arrangement. We'll talk about the arrangement because there's a bunch of cool guitar parts in this one.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Mr. No One, and I did an edit of it,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lead at the end. So we got to talk about that just because there's a lead at the end.
Yeah.
But anyway, take a listen, and again, if you're listening to the podcast directly in stereo, listen because there's a lot of stuff happening in this. So this is Mr. No One. Take a listen.
Try to leave, but
Yeah. I love the backward feedback.
Who doesn't?
Yes. No, that... Now, it's the lead. What are you using there?
That is identifiably the Vox Tone Lab.
The Tone Lab with which guitar?
I did most leads on, aside from Gone, which is on the 345, with a Telecaster.
Okay, yeah. That's a Tele.
The Tele
sounds great.
Yeah, I have... in both of my Telecasters, I have the... Oh, what the heck's it called? I can never remember. The Chopper T, I guess, is the pickup. The bridge pickup, and that's the stack. I guess it's a stacked single coil, whatever, stacked. And it's just thicker. It's louder. It's, I don't know. It's not, it doesn't have that. There's no noise.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. You know, the only thing I don't like about it is it has those rails versus the pins, you know, the things. And it doesn't look as cool, but... Sounds pretty good.
No, it's more actually the rails more when you bend and stuff. It doesn't
run off the magnetic field.
But the were you using amps for the rhythm guitars? Those doom, 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 doom.
Yeah, yes, for sure. That I forgot to say when I run through either the 68 Vibrachamp or the Princeton or the Orange, I always have a pedal in the front that I may or may not use. And for the Fender amps, I use a Boss BD2 that was Keeley modded. I don't know what he did with it. He put some kind of... he just broadened the spectrum. Robert Keeley sent it to him. He mods it, sends it back. And for the Orange amps, I always use a Rat Big Box. You know those things, the big ones? Mm-hmm. The old Rats that just sound ridiculously good. It's just dirty and...
But I love that sound.
Yeah,
and that's it, right? You're not doing any other processing.
No.
Because those chords that you're doing, they're like tense. You're getting that.
I'll show you what that is here. It's not on this guitar.
Oh, it goes through the plate glass window.
All right, so Mr. No One. Look at that, I'm already capoed up. This was an open G. Four or so songs were in open G in this album. And so it's open G capo 2, which would be open A, I guess you could call it. And that's just... And I put the bass note in.
There's a little preview of the acoustic only album.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's actually all I've heard. I've heard you do
so many
of these songs.
I've been playing these songs. Really, thank you. Thanks. Thank you to Lori for all her open her singer-songwriter nights.
Yeah,
I've been able to preview a lot of
the material. He comes along with when I book a date for my
And I appreciate that because, you know what, it kind of kicked my butt into saying I have to bring new material. So it kind of prompted me to want to continue writing.
Yep.
And I miss, you know, we haven't done it in a couple months, but I miss that constantly.
Well, it's going to be interesting to hear the acoustic album because hearing the studio album with the cuts we played, you can hear how huge it is. So, and that was pretty full by just you by yourself.
Yep.
The acoustic album is just that. It's just me and the guitar, and that's
but
it.
But, I mean, for most of the time since I've known you, you've been playing by yourself when you play live shows. And then
it's
it was
just
like,
easier.
I want to hear your band.
I know, you know? I do too. I just wish I wish I had the luxury to constantly, you know, rehearse with the band. Perfect. You know, I have great guys that I play with.
You got to bring those synths out. You have to bring those synths out.
I'm scared.
Yeah,
this thing's
too cool.
Fragile.
Well, there's going to be a CD release.
On June 8th at Hotel Cafe. It's going to be, I anticipate it being a full band show.
Well, we're almost out of time, and then I want to talk a little bit about the closing
song. We should
song.
Say shout out to Anne Rinaldi. Woo!
Anne Rinaldi, thank you, Anne, for all. She's my de facto manager, and I appreciate all she's done.
So,
as Lori as well has been very, very much my cheerleader, I'm in debt. In debt to you.
www. Ron Bonfilio.
No, not Ron.
Rob. Von Filio. I can't.
Everybody
read
gets
my...
that wrong. Don't worry.
No, no. I'm trying to read.
Here, let me spell it. RobBonFiglio.com.
Rob Von Filio.
It's hard. It's a mouthful.
Rob Von Filio. It's hard to say the two together.
Imagine living with that name.
But you were going to mention you have that piece of paper. I want to hear about the gigs where you're playing.
Oh, I just had some. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I don't forget my little gig thing. I'm doing a lot of stuff with Wilson Phillips. I'm their guitar player. We are doing a gig on the 17th of May at the Avalon Theater in Hollywood.
Very cool.
It's for the Heart Foundation or something, with Nancy Wilson of Heart. And we're going to be doing stuff with Nancy Wilson. So
nice.
I'm losing my mind.
Nice.
Let's just say that we are going to go crazy on something.
I'm crazy on you.
Yeah. Let's just say that. Let's just say I've been shedding that. Okay, so and then the 19th of May, Wilson Phillips will be in Colorado somewhere. I don't know where. And then the 8th of June is my CD release show at Hotel Cafe. The 14th of June, we're doing a show at Bogey's called The Children of the 60s with my good buddy Jeff Allen Ross.
Jeff. Shout out to Jeff Allen Ross.
Jeff.
Woo.
He's not listening, but if he was,
I'll make him.
There's my shout
out. You're part of the.
We do like all these great songs, like Small Faces and Hollies. Yeah. Okay. And then the 17th, I'm sorry. Yeah. July 15th, Wilson Phillips again in Ojai, wherever that is, somewhere up north. And then July 22nd at Bogey's with John Pratt. Are you there, John? Hi, I love you.
Me too.
And Lori, of course, is involved.
And July 29th, we've got the next Songwriter Showcase.
Ooh, July 29th.
Yes, yes.
Is that July 29th? Okay.
So
That's the birthday show, right?
That's right.
Post-birthday show.
So everybody, I can't recommend enough getting this album. It's a real interesting album. Some great sounds, great tones, and great styles.
Thanks.
And this last clip, really... I'm going to play Hey Blue, and it's got kind of a Who feel to
me. Yes,
it
sure does.
So anything you want to say in terms of the guitars or anything where you...
This was pretty simple because there wasn't a whole lot of guitar. I was listening to a lot of Who's Next. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, so...
It's an homage to my
favorite
album.
And guys are going to have to get the album to hear Trouble again, the title track.
Oh, the Trouble, yeah.
Yes, I didn't get a chance to play that.
There's a lot of good songs. I swear to God they're good by it.
So this is Hey Blue. Everybody, thank you. Right. And Rob, thank
Jeff,
you so
thank
much.
You.
And
thank
I'm
you, as always.
Looking forward to have you back again.
Thank you, sir.
There's never enough. And Lori, of course.
And Lori Reamer, of course, is the best.
Thank you. So here
love you guys.
Here's Hey Blue. And everybody, have a great week. We'll be back next week.
Believe it's over.